Hi, I'm Meredith.
And I'm Kristen, and we'd like to welcome you to the Writer's Story.
So we were just talking about the new year, and I think a lot of times in the new year people make resolutions and they say, whatever, for the next 12 months I'm going to do this or that. And we both had kind of a rough start to the year. COVID, I don't know, January just sort of seemed to explode everything. It was just a terrible month in general. And then February, I feel like just went by in a flash. So I just wanted to propose that March 1st is our new writing new year.
I love that. I love that. Not least because last year I had a goal for the year that I was almost able to meet, but I needed a couple more months because I had to throw a couple of months to some intense personal stuff, which was all good. But no regrets on that. But I could totally use a couple more months. And even though we had one extra day in February flew. So and you've got some new stuff starting up for yourself right now, and I have a new writing love. So tell us a little bit about your new writing stuff.
Well, my new writing stuff is not that new, but it is one of those things. It's really funny, but I always have this thing where I'm like, okay, I've just finished the first draft. I'm going to start the second draft. And it never happens quite as quickly as I think it will be because I really do need that time away from it. And I think my mind will just push it away, and I just can't focus on it. But lately I've been lots of bubbling ideas, and I have done something which I would never have believed a year or two ago, but I have broken up with Scrivener and am now using Dabble, and I think it's going to help me be a little more mobile with my writing in terms of, not being stuck with one device or another. And I think having a new writing tool like that is always kind of energizing for me. It's a little like getting a new pen and a new notebook.
You and I are so different in that. I see a new writing tool like that and think, oh no, there goes, like, I don't know, a bunch of time right down a black hole of anxiety and trying to learn a new thing. I am so almost analog. Actually, I have been doing a lot of handwriting, but I am in Microsoft Documents, and that is where I live. Although I did appreciate my dabbling, so to speak, in Scrivener. But so yay to you for getting that extra jolt of energy for a new, with a new writing tool. And it does sound like it's very useful for your writing journey, for your con the context in which you write these days. Yeah. Well, my new thing is I was introduced to a poetic form, an old poetry form from Japan called a tanka. It looks a lot like a haiku. It actually is like a haiku with two more lines. But so a haiku of a three-line poem with, five syllables in the first line, seven in the second, five in the third. And a tanka is those plus seven syllable line plus another seven syllable line. And kind of like sonnets in our English poetic tradition, there is an expectation that the poem will turn, in this case, about midway through. So on that third line. And I have had so much fun writing tankas. I realize I'm thinking in tankas, which is a little bit dangerous and annoying. And I had a dream with tanka last night. So anyway, I've had a lot of fun with this new form. It's so compact that you can feel like you're, well, it does. It's writing. It's writing in another form. And I just am finding it really, really fun to work in.
I find it so confusing as the mother of someone who used to be a small boy who would have Tonka trucks.
Oh, yes. And actually, one of my tankas riffs on that because tanka is actually the spelling of the Japanese poetic form is Tanka in our transliteration. And yeah, tanka toys, the tanka trucks, were from this Minnetonka, Minnesota-based company. Minnetonka, of course, is a native word. And we actually also had these Tonka pie makers. So the Tonka trucks people also made these things. They were like an early, what are they called? Paninis, that sandwich press.
Oh.
But these you can actually put into a campfire. We have them up at our cabin. They're so
I'm like,
great.
what does this have to do with trucks? Is it just because it's made out of metal?
No, it's that it's the name of the company was
But what else? But then they
the
just
Tonka.
make like a campfire panini press and then little toy trucks?
Oh, right. Yeah, I don't know. I don't know. I think they probably had a few different products,
Maybe
but
they
the
made
trucks
those
were the ones that made it big.
terrible metal camp chairs that you used to sit in as a kid.
Oh, maybe so. Yeah,
I
I
don't
don't know.
know. Other
But
metal items.
anyway, of course, there has been, thankfully, much more sensitivity around, co-opting indigenous words and, native. So there were Minnetonka moccasins, you may remember. Anyway,
Oh.
that company has really been doing some soul searching and reframing their product and the ways that they represent the native people who, of course, are still there, our neighbors in Minnesota. And so, anyway, I did play a little bit on that use of Tonka in our culture and
Fun.
misuse, anyway, in one of my Tonkas, in one of my
Very
poems.
fun.
Yeah, but I don't think
Well,
Japanese Tonka has any relationship to, I don't think anyway,
yeah,
to
it doesn't
the
sound
Native
like it.
American Minnetonka. Yeah.
Well, we have an exciting guest today. We
We do.
have a repeat. We don't do that very often. We've only done that
Yeah.
with a select few.
Yes. But Katrin Schumann will be joining us again. She came and spoke with us, I think it was in 2020, when her novel, This Terrible Beauty, was published. That's an historical fiction set in the time of World War II. It was a beautiful novel. And but she also serves as the program coordinator of the Key West Literary Seminar and workshops. She also has a Substack channel, is that what they're called? I think. Anyway, a Substack newsletter she writes called The Curious Cat, with a K, playing on cat, her name, Katrin. The Curious Cat, in which she champions creativity and connection. She also has a blog that helps writers with business related issues and questions, and does some editing as well, helping writers. So she does a lot for writers, as well as, of course, being a very busy writer herself. She wrote a book called The Forgotten Hours, which is presently was picked up by a film development company and is in they're slating it for a limited series. So that's in the works. And she has returned to historical fiction, has written a novel, or is in the process of working on a novel that is set in the Spanish island of Ibiza in the mid 60s. I guess her grandmother was from there. So anyway, she's got lots of different kinds of things going on, and so it'll be fun to hear from her some more of the details around these things.
Awesome. Let's go call her up.
Sounds good. Hi, Katrin.
Hi, nice to see you again.
It's good to see you. Thanks so much for joining us.
I love
Well, I'm happy to
peeking.
be here. If you ask me, I'm always available for questions, talking about books. I never get bored of it.
I love peeking into writers' rooms. I think it's so fascinating. I feel like I see a calendar with sticky notes and lots of books.
That's actually not a calendar. It's a sort of schema for my next book.
Oh, even
So,
better.
yeah, I'm generally, in the past, I've been a real pantser. And what that has meant is that I have just written and written and written and written and written. And then I've had to edit the hell out of these books. And I just finally got sick of it. So I've turned a new leaf, and I now believe in plotting before I get started. So that's my effort at that.
Wow.
Now, is this a novel other than the one that's set in Ibiza?
Yes.
Okay, wow.
Yeah, so essentially, over the last couple of years, I've had a challenging time with my agent, and I've had to do a lot of sitting around and waiting. Mm. And so for the first time, I've never really overlapped books like this before, but I can't sit still and I like to write and I want to work. And so I just got started on the next one. You know, it's kind of difficult if you're really deeply involved in a project. You can't really just switch from one to another like that. You know, you become invested yeah. and then you really want to keep going. But in this case, I started work on the next one. And that's what that rubric is all about.
That's wow. exciting. Is it another historical fiction?
It is. And actually, you know, writing has always been this mixture of fun and agony for me. And I'm hoping, you know, fingers crossed, that this next book is going to be more on the fun side, you know, and maybe that has something to do with planning it a little bit more. You know, that might be working in my favor, but it's historical. I mean, I don't have the great one-liner yet, but it's basically a story that's going to look at the interaction of this Japanese-American family that has a grand villa in the Catskills. It's based on a real story. And their interaction with a German immigrant girl who is wants to be educated and wants to be a teacher and isn't allowed to, and she ends up being a maid in their house. And there's a whole mystery involved in the story, and it's going to be set in the 1920s and in the 1950s.
Wow.
So dual storyline, you know, just trying to make it complicated for myself as usual.
But don't you always feel, though, there's just a phase in every book where it's the greatest thing ever and then it's the worst thing in the world? I mean, it's kind of like, you know.
Yes, absolutely true. Although for me, in my experience, the beginning is always incredibly hard. Like I sort of hated at the beginning, because when I don't really have anything down yet, that's when I feel at my least secure about it. When I'm really wondering, like, is this even interesting? And what the hell am I trying to say? And, you know, I don't yet really know where I'm headed. And I feel that this time it's just a really good, robust, fun, solid, I mean, not only fun, but it's sort of more solid story, and I don't feel as kind of tormented at this early stage. So I'm just hoping the good vibes are going to keep at it, you know, keep going.
Yeah, sending good vibes your way. So the plotting that you've done, how did you get started on the plotting?
Yeah, I've tried in the past. I mean, believe me, I've wanted to be organized about my books. And what I find is that typically I can't really come up with plot unless I'm writing. So when I'm in the middle of a scene, or when I'm in the act of creating, that's when my mind opens up and I start to think of different possibilities, and I can create plot. But this time around, I think it might be a little different because it's based on a real story. I mean, I'm making all sorts of stuff up, but the research is so fascinating, and there's just so much incredibly good material that I can use, that I feel I feel like the plotting elements are going to work more in my favor. And I'm finding I'm not having any trouble sort of imagining the different scenarios as I did previously when I was sort of making up the story more from scratch. So, you know, I have various books that I own a lot of books on plot, but I've never really read them very carefully. I never really liked the abstraction of them. You know, I read it and I think, oh, that sounds great. And then I have no idea how to put it into practice. But I have to admit that recently, you know, over the last couple of years, I've taken a liking to this book, Save the Cat. Mm. you know, which is a very well-known rubric for screenwriters. And there's a book that interprets that approach for novelists, and it kind of makes sense to me. It just helps me with the overall pacing and to think about where I want my, you know, high points and am I really leaning in enough to the drama in the particular moment and in the right moment? So I've been finding that really helpful.
I've used that book as well, and I am originally a screenwriter, so it does really speak to me. So that whole notion, I mean, I always think about it, you know, I thought it was a great analogy of like clothespins, like so your story doesn't just hang on the ground, but you hook it up, and where is it sort of, when are these moments that you need to hit? So I'm a huge plotter, actually, and so the other stuff takes a lot longer for me, like, you know, the scenery or the developing the people or that kind of stuff. I sort of can race through a draft and it's all action. So it's always interesting to hear what other people's pain points are because, you know, we're all
I know
really
it's like there really isn't one size fits all in the writing world, is there? I mean, we all have our ways, we all do it differently. But I do feel like this is now my fourth book, fifth if you count the book that is in the drawer forever and will never see the light of day. So, you know, maybe after that many tens of thousands of words, I've learned something. It's what I'm hoping.
I think you're so right that it's different for every writer. And then also for every writer, it may be different with different projects, or it may be different along the way. You know, the pantser approach certainly did serve you well. I mean, you wrote some wonderful books using that. And maybe, you know, it was kind of what your, I don't know, your soul sort of needed to keep interested and excited about a project as you were writing it back in that time. But now this is really speaking to you and working, which is, I think it's nice to feel as a writer that we have some liberty in growing or changing our styles and so on.
Well, it's all also kind of amazing to me, and I don't know whether you feel this too, but you know, when I've written so much and I'm now, you know, working on my fourth book, I'm kind of astonished how long it takes me to learn certain things about myself and what I need and what I'm really doing and how I'm doing it. I mean, you would think that you would write one book and it, you know, if you manage to sell it and it's successful, well, bingo, there you go. Now you just
Do
keep
that
going.
again. Just do that again.
No, rinse and repeat. But you're right, it doesn't work that way. And each project really kind of requires its own different kind of approach and commitment. But that's also, for me, part of what makes it exciting. You know, it isn't rote. I'm not churning these things out. You know, it does require a certain amount of kind of obsession and focus that will shift a little bit from one project to another.
Yeah.
Excellent.
So you have, as we mentioned before calling you up, about all of the different kinds of things you have going. So you've got also the Substack newsletter in which you're talking about creativity and art and connection and community. Can you tell us a little bit more about that project and yeah, its relationship to your writing too?
Sure. Well, that's kind of interesting because I started writing not on Substack, but I originally used MailChimp. I started writing it before I was published, before my novel was published. And I had wanted, so I wrote a creative writing oriented blog for Grub Street, which is a creative writing center in Boston for many, many years. But I had wanted to sort of have my own voice and my own blog or you know mail newsletter out there, but I felt like you know I'm not a published fiction writer. I don't really have a right to do. I'll wait until I'm published and then I'll do it. But I kept circling back to it, and I just really wanted to do it. I think there was something about it that even before I started, I knew that I would enjoy it because it would be more targeted. It wasn't just sort of putting it out randomly in the world and hoping that somebody would stumble on it. You have a group of people who are willingly agreeing to read your stuff, and you know, you can see whether they've read it and enjoyed it. And I always have conversations with people about each time I write it. So at the beginning, I knew that that was going to be really satisfying for me. And I just thought, to hell with it, I'm going to start anyway. Who cares if I'm published or not? And so I launched it, and slowly but surely, I mean, I used to have a huge newsletter following for my nonfiction stuff. But when I started all over again for the fiction, you know, it just had a few dozen people, and then it would grow a little bit and grow a little bit. But then Substack started to get popular, and I sort of jumped on that bandwagon pretty quickly because I had tired of the way that MailChimp is kind of structured, you know, and it's hard to grow your audience on MailChimp. It's just so, it's a completely different thing, really. The experience of being on Substack has been fantastic. And interestingly, it's changed my feeling a little bit about my newsletter, because now people are signing up. I mean, it's a constant slow trickle of people signing up from who knows where. They're stumbling onto it, and that didn't happen previously. So I feel a little bit more pressure. It feels less like my group of friends, you know, my few hundreds of friends, and it's like, this is now the bigger world. And each time I write it, I'm really trying to focus not just on myself or even on the writing world. I don't want it to just be for writers. It's not a how to write blog, you know, or newsletter based solely on craft. I'm really more interested in writing more generally about what makes us tick, and creativity and productivity, and, you know, just art and culture, and building a community around that. That's my favorite outreach that I do. Of all the many different hats that I wear, that's the one I really love.
Oh, that's great. And again, for our reader, or for our listeners, that's the Curious Cat, the K.
Yes.
I was going to say, does that tie in at all with your work in Key West? Do you feel like those are sort of two parts of the same thing, or are they really sort of different sides of your...
They're pretty different, because the work that I do here in Key West for the Key West Literary Seminar, I am not doing that work as a writer. I'm doing that work as the program coordinator. And so, you know, I talk with the other writers about my work eventually, but that's not my primary role with that organization. It's to, you know, hire people and to give out scholarships and that sort of stuff. So there's not really a huge amount of crossover between my personal writing, my novel writing, and so on. Although now I'm teaching for the seminar, which is fun. So we're beginning to see a little bit more crossover. I really like to teach. I really love to teach in person. And, you know, we usually only run the seminar and workshops in January, and we don't have programming typically throughout the rest of the year. And so it's a real opportunity, since I live here and I'm here all year and I can teach, you know, why not? And Arlo, the executive director, was very open to it, and is pleased about having the chance to have additional workshops. It's not that hard for me, and I really like it. So actually this month I'm going to be teaching three workshops in the Elizabeth Bishop House, which I also think is kind of a thrill. It's the first time that we'll have people coming in to the Bishop House to be learning about creating and writing and so on. And I kind of feel honored that I'm the one who's getting to bring that life back into the house.
Well, she did have quite a few houses, if I believe her poetry. The art of losing is not hard to master. She says how many houses, and I've forgotten a number in the poem.
Yeah, she did have a number of houses, but there are not that many that are left. I don't think I should know probably more details, but I think this is one of only two or maybe three homes that she owned that is kind of still intact. And so I think it's a pretty important place in the United States as an honor to her. So I feel I'm really excited about
That sounds really
being to gather
exciting.
writers together and
I'm with you
talk
though
about.
on the teaching. I've been offered Zoom classes since the pandemic, and I've always just said, well, I think I would have to change too much. And there's something about the intimacy and the sort of the honesty of all sitting around a table and being present with the work that I feel like Zoom, I just feel like I'd have to kind of recreate how I teach, and I'm maybe just feel too tired.
Yeah, I actually also am teaching this month on Zoom. So I still teach for Grub Street in Boston. And so I just had my first class this morning, which was 3 hours long.
Wow.
It's pretty tiring to sit and look at a screen, but I guess I felt during COVID was when I started teaching on Zoom again. And I felt so grateful to have any connection. I just embraced it. I was like, hallelujah, human beings are out there and I'm talking to people and so I've kind of gotten used to it. And I'm pretty good at really paying attention and calling people out and trying to get the conversation going. So it's not the same, but it'll do, it works for me. I wouldn't do it all the time, but it is a nice way to stay connected with writers who are all over the place.
Yep, for
Well,
sure.
that's the greatest advantage, it seems to me, is that you can have people from all over the place landing simultaneously in there through their computers
Yeah.
in cyberspace. Yeah, but
The access, it's access for people.
yeah.
Whether they might traditionally not be able to, they don't have the funds to go travel somewhere to take a workshop, or they're just sort of, they're somewhere that is more remote, or one of our students was called in from Greece today, and so it's nice to have that variety and to be able to offer it to people who might not otherwise be able to take a workshop.
Oh,
Yeah.
absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely. I think it was sort of a time of Zoom overload. So I spend a lot of my work day on Zoom, and by
Oh
the end of
yeah.
the day, it's kind of like, oh, yeah.
Yeah. I bet I would not like to spend more time, even more time on Zoom than I do for the teaching, that's for sure.
Yeah, but my writing
Yeah.
group does days on Zoom. And it is about 3 hours, and we do have to make sure we take breaks. But,
So I wanted to ask you too, Katrin, about the Key West, the organizing for the Key West Literary Seminar seems to me, for, as an outsider observer, to that y'all have done a really wonderful job of being intentional about diversifying the of literary landscape. You had the seminar theme, not this year, but the year before, I think it was, on the literature of Black America, which was so vibrant, really exciting. And then this year, there, I think it was had kind of an ecological sort of angle, looking at, and also local Florida, the state we're in. I loved the tagline. Anyway, I wonder if you could talk a little bit about that and just diversifying our literary experiences, how that's helped.
Yeah, I have learned so much about that in the last few years from Grub Street, this organization in Boston, which really has made an incredible effort to make their courses more available to a variety of people and really calling it out, really saying like everybody has a story to tell. And the world that we live in often prioritizes certain stories over others. And it's a lot to do with access, and it's a lot to do with what we're accustomed to. And the writers that I read might be sort of, without my even being aware of it, might be writers that look kind of more like me, because I think that's what's going to interest me. So we have to really be, we're overdue in being really intentional about opening ourselves up to a variety of different stories, because people have incredibly valuable things to share. And so I think in terms of people who can enjoy the seminar, who can sit there and listen to other writers, but also people in my program, which is the workshop program, we are just very aware of wanting to have a lot of people with different kinds of stories to tell and different experiences and different backgrounds. Now, we have a particular hurdle to overcome in Key West, and that is that we are really far away, and to come and enjoy our workshops or the seminar, you have to either drive or fly to the end of America. You know, you have to make your way to the very tippy tip 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 of America, and then you have to stay somewhere, and hotel prices have gone through the roof. So that's pretty tricky. I mean, that's an uphill battle that we're fighting, is like, how do we make this more accessible to a greater and a more diverse group of people? So I'm specifically tasked with, in my scholarship programs, being really aware and trying to encourage people to apply who would not normally see themselves being part of our group. And that's, you know, that's a challenging thing to do. I'm not trained in that. I don't have great expertise in that. I just do my best. You know, I'm trying to reach out and be just be aware and be open and inviting. And in terms of who we invite, on the other hand, so the faculty who come to teach and the presenters who are presenting at the seminar, you know, the bottom line is it's not hard to find amazing writers who are writers of color or who are minority in some way or have come from very different backgrounds. I mean, they are, it's so wonderful now that I feel like it's a little bit more mainstream and we're seeing more available and more, you know, there's just more publicity generally, and we've learned to be paying attention and to be listening. And so we're finding those writers to come and teach, and they're fabulous. The workshops have been, you know, people have really enjoyed them. And as you say, the same with the seminar. So it's not, it's no longer appropriate to have, you know, a whole group of people that just all look the same telling these stories and leading these groups. You know, we really want and need that diversity.
I think your awareness is really just, I think, super key, though. I think there's a lot of organizations and there's a lot of arts organizations that kind of sit around and say, oh my gosh, everyone that comes to, I don't know, the opera is elderly. How are we possibly going to get younger people interested in the opera? And, you know, and it's sort of like, you have to think outside the box. It can't be, you know, you think about, what are my ticket prices? Like, you know, when are the shows? You know, what is the, what is the interest level that people have for the subject matter? Could we do other shows? You know, you have to think about a lot of different things. And I think some people get a little too rigid, and that really does make it hard for them to diversify, whether it's by age or race or culture or any of that stuff. If they're not able to be a little more open to think about, why would someone want to come?
Yeah. And they have to see themselves being invited in. You know, why are they going to search this out if it historically has not been something that they've felt is where there's a place for them? So that's the tricky part, is that you really do need to be more proactive. You know, you need to have statements out there and images on your website and, you know, stuff that makes people who might not traditionally be drawn to that see themselves in it and start to think, oh, well, maybe I'd feel comfortable there. I don't know. You know, maybe I wouldn't feel like the weird odd one out or something.
Absolutely.
And that you did such a, I'll say it, a really good job of having such a diverse faculty for your workshops. The people teaching those workshops came from all over. That makes a big difference to me. I mean, I just think for me as a woman, I kind of, you know, it just feels, I might feel a little more comfortable, you know, writing, especially as a student in writing, it's a vulnerable place to be and to feel like the person who is guiding this group maybe has some similarities to me, makes it easier to think I could be there and make it a good experience. So to have such diversity among your teachers is really, really great. It's an invitation without even having to use words. It's just like, look, here we are.
Well, I appreciate that. I'm in the process now of hiring faculty for next January. And it's great to hear that these things are appreciated and noticed. And we have some great people coming already. Hilton Ong is coming, and Kwame Dawes will be with us, and Andre Deuce will teach fiction. It'll be a mixed crowd again, which is good.
Well, I have just one last question for you, and that is, how do you make time and space in your head for your writing while you're doing, you know, your Substack and you're working on the Key West Literary Festival?
I mean, that's question. You know, it's interesting. I'm also somebody who's not a good multitasker. I'm super hyper-focused. I like to focus on one thing at a time. I don't do two things at the same time. So I'm pretty methodical. And when I turn my attention to something, it gets my full attention. So that might play in my favor, actually, because I'm not super distracted when I'm in one activity. So, for example, luckily I can pretty much arrange my own schedule when I go into the office for my work with Key West Literary Seminar. And, you know, today, for instance, now today I spent many hours teaching, so it wasn't like I had an open day to write. But let's say I wasn't teaching, I would really try to keep the day for myself for my writing. And when I'm in a project, there's a certain amount of momentum that keeps me going. And so I'll go into the office tomorrow, I'll do my work, and I'll be really focused on that work, but I'm really itching to get back. And when I come back and I have that, you know, hour or two, because it doesn't end up being, you know, 4 hours of writing on my book and 4 hours at the office, it's, you know, it does end up being less. If I already have a certain momentum going, then I can dig back into it pretty easily. The hard thing is if I'm starting something new, you know, if I'm struggling with something, getting launched, not having a certain rhythm or routine or pattern and momentum, that can be tricky for me. And things like the Substack, I mean, that does actually take me a lot of time. And I only do it once a month. Mm. That's why I don't do it every week. There is no way on earth I could write that Substack every single week. So, you know, I try to be reasonable about what I expect of myself. But I do also like to work. Like, I don't have hobbies. You know, I read and I write and I do my work for KWLS. And I mean, I started a painting because I thought I should have a hobby. And I can tell you that the painting isn't going anywhere. It didn't work in terms of getting me focused on other activities. I'm pretty focused on the writing.
That's so awesome. Well, we just really appreciate you coming back to talk to us. I think it's super fun to have people back. We've just said it's an honor because we only have a few people that were like, wow, we didn't actually talk enough to this person, and we're going to have them back. And usually it's about a new project too, but I think obviously Key West Literary Seminars, yeah, it's a whole nother project. Yeah. Or a project every year, or 20 projects or something. I mean, that's a lot.
Yeah, it's a cycle. So as soon as it's over, we start work again for the next year. But I appreciate you having me back. It's really nice of you. And maybe if I get this next Ibiza book published, maybe I can come and talk about that.
Sounds
Let us know.
Awesome.
Goodness, Godspeed with that. I hope that it can find a good landing place and that this other novel just keeps coming apace. It sounds wonderful.
Thank you. I hope so too. We'll see. I'm determined to be bullish and optimistic and not listen to the naysayers about the industry and how tough it is, and to just assume it's all going to go great. That's
good.
I'm telling myself.
I love it. That is a perfect attitude for us to end on.
Yes. Thank you, Katrin.
Thank you so much.
Good night.
Bye for now.
Bye.
Wow, she has so many things going on. It was such a giant conversation.
Yeah, really fun and really inspirational. It's so much fun to be, and I love visiting with you, Meredith, for the same reason, to be with folks in conversation about creativity. And I just, you know, I love hearing her, you know, her process and how her process has changed. And the different projects and their relationship, or the way that she manages the different ones, also is really inspiring. I loved hearing more of her story.
Yes. And I thought that was so funny. I mean, my first reaction, and sorry to our listeners who couldn't see into her room, but my first reaction to the image behind her ended up being a large part of our conversation, which was her journey from being a pantser to a plotter. And I know that's such a typical question to ask when you talk to writers. But, you know, to hear someone has made an evolutionary jump in their writing is really fascinating, and sort of why, but also, you know, thinking about it being by book or at different phases in your life or what you need at the time.
Yeah. And it occurs to me, I don't think we defined pantser. Pantser is writing by the seat of your pants. So without a plan. And it's can be a lot of fun and it can generate some wonderful things, but it does tend to mean that you have to do quite a lot of editing.
Yeah. Usually. And, you know, and then plotters sometimes can, you know, it doesn't mean that you've, you know, written out, you know, 100-page outline. It could just be that you've, you know, figured out rudimentary plot points and that kind of stuff.
I think everyone I've talked to who plots, and I am among them, find that the plot can change. So it's not like the outline is fixed.
Right. It's kind of like having a rough idea of how you're going to do your road trip, but then being willing to, you know, something exciting comes up, being willing to take a little side trip or change your destination.
Analogy.
I mean, but you don't get into the car and say, "Oh, I believe we'll just drive randomly for 30 days."
Although you could.
You could. Yeah. You totally could.
Oh, another walk randomly. Yeah. Yes. So it was fun to have her, Katrin Schumann, on the show, and looking forward to what she'll tell us about this next steps in her journey.
Yes. And have a lovely March. Happy New Year.
And to you. Yes. And we're just getting started.
We're starting fresh. I know next month we'll have lots to report on how much progress we made this incredible March, aka January.
Yes.
So until next time.
Bye for now.
Bye-bye.